How's it going, Coxie?
Not bad, not bad. Yourselves?
Aye, good, mate.
Good. I'm liking the hat. Hat's very good.
Oh, aye. That's nice.
Yeah, I bought a hat. Needed a hat.
What a hot topic.
I'm thinking about getting a Backstreet Barber to come.
Is it bad, Coxie? Aye.
Aye.
Well, very careful. Listen, Backstreet haircuts, you be very careful with that. It can go badly wrong.
It's terrible. I'll see what happens.
You need Coxie, a bowl job.
A bowl job.
Somebody remind me, what's the theme? Is it fears, phobias?
Fears and phobias and all that. Aye.
I thought it was, so I've written something.
I was going to, but I've got a fear of lists.
Hello, folks. We're all here and we're all good to go. This week, we want to talk about fears and phobias. So welcome, everybody, to the podcast that gives you the willies.
Willy giving podcast. How lovely.
We've got three willies anyway, so that's nice.
Coming up later in the episode, we've got the amazing Matt Costello, Stevie the Bookie, if you're still game.
Yes.
Well, that's Steve something to look forward Matt to. Costello.
Hey, Matt. Jane, you want to give us your Matt Costello impression?
Yeah, right, Jane. How you doing today?
Oh, listen, by the way, fears. I've got a fear. I've got a quick fear for you.
Okay.
We did a thing last week on Aberdeen and all sorts, and on Twitter, we created Buttery Gate because people were complaining about whether the butteries are rubbies, and then I cut it out of the podcast, so it wasn't there. Can we just do a quick thing? Butteries are rubbies. What I've heard is you call them butteries if you're in Aberdeenshire, rubbies if you're in Aberdeen. The jury's out. The woman who tweeted and said she calls them rolls, she's the only one. No one else is calling them rolls. No one's convinced by that.
No, you don't want that.
And Joanne McKeith tried to get butteries banned.
Oh,
did she?
Dr. Joanne McKeith, as she was called before she was told you can't call yourself a doctor. Yeah, tried to get them banned.
Well, she didn't try and ban like caramel shortcake or anything. It's probably the same fat content. So,
well, it's doubtful actually. And butteries is, that's half your daily fat. Unless you're scraping the side of a pig, there's nothing got the same fat content.
Side of a pig.
In ages since I've done that.
And that's me. I'm done. That's buttery gate sorted. Okay.
Okay. Right, good. Well done. Box ticked. Moving on.
Right, I guess my biggest fear is a fear of heights, and I've had it since as long as I can remember. And what's that phrase? Was it feel the fear and date anyway, something like that? So yeah. I tried to kind of conquer it. One was the CN Tower, which I went up with Ford and Greg when we did Still Game, the stage show in Toronto, and that really compounded it for me because there's a glass floor and there was kids jumping up and down on it and all that, and I couldn't bear it. 2 years ago, I just went, I'm going to try it once more. I went up the Freedom Tower in New York, and you come out the lift and you're in a kind of darkened room, and they project onto the wall this wee kind of like 1 minute trailer of New York City, and then the wall just disappears and the whole of Manhattan's in front of you, and I just grabbed onto the handrail right behind me. I couldn't move. I was scared stiff. So I waited for the whole tour to go around and then got back in the lift and went down the stairs.
Yeah, that's scary.
You don't need to travel far to know about your height phobia. I'm not great with heights. However, I've seen your face in the second floor of Prince's Square. You're doing an escalator in the shopping centre. Looking up.
I know, it's horrible. And I go on it like a wee baby or something. It's horrible. I know, it's just weird. I don't know. But
I'm going to want to see a baby on it. That'd be creepy. My main fear as a youth was rabies. I remember telling a teacher in primary school, and I remember her laughing with her big 70s hair and a big tweed long skirt. But it was a whole thing because it was the advertisement, they had the fox coming through the tunnel. And then, I looked up, this was pre-Google, one of the symptoms is a fear of water. So the whole period of looking at glasses of water, thinking, am I okay with that? You know, it was horrible, horrible, horrible. You foamed at the mouth when you died. I never knew anybody that had it. But
sometimes everybody had an uncle that foamed at the mouth just naturally when they spoke. And I had an uncle that did that. And I used to have terrible anxiety that he had rabies, but he was a carrier, so he didn't get the full symptoms. Sometimes if he was telling me a story and a wee bit of spittle would land on me, I'd be up through the night in a sweat. Then I was obsessed with nuclear war. I was sure, absolutely, that terrified me. And there was a siren went off in Glasgow, and I don't know if anybody remembers that. That had been the early 80s. And my mum got into the bed with me and cuddled me and thought that we were both going to die. She just thought that was it, that was the end.
How are you with spiders, Coxie?
I'm fine with spiders.
Oh, that's strange. That's strange because you shat yourself for the tarantula when it came to visit the set.
Oh, don't even start that. We've got the photographs of that.
Yeah, right. No, you don't. No, you don't. If you if you had proof, you would tweet it.
You would specify a big spider. That was quite a big spider, if I remember.
Just to put you in the picture, good people of the internet, we had a tarantula on set of Still Game at one point, and myself and Jane, I asked the handler, I says, what's the story? Would it kill me? He says, well, you'd need to go to the hospital for sure if it bit you. And I went, stick it on my wrist. So he put it on my wrist, and I've got a photograph of the tarantula on my wrist, and Jane did the same. Coxie was nowhere to be found.
No. Aye,
because do you know why? I'd like to have seen you with a tarantula on your wrist up a ladder. You wouldn't have liked that much, would you?
Oh, really? Really?
Hey, so get me down, I don't like it.
The tarantula would have got me through it. The guy actually, in this particular episode, the guy had all sorts of exotic things, remember? There was a shot of two snakes on my foot crawling out across, and they took that shot. And I was just like, I was like a morbidly obese Indiana Jones. It was, quite something.
That guy brought out, but he was the animal handler, so did he not bring out, he drove it in his van with two cockroaches one time for a shot. So he would bring anything that was required that was alive. Sometimes greyhounds, horses, down to cockroaches.
I remember, I think it might have actually been the Baldy Man, and all I had to do was walk past with this enormous dog. But the dog, there was a pretend jobby that the dog was supposed to have done, and somebody would complain about it, and that was the scene that I hadn't picked it up. But the dog was so big and so strong, and the jobby was actually made from a Mars bar, that the dog kept eating the jobby, and I couldn't get the dog to stop. And after the fourth time, of course dogs are allergic to chocolate, it's really bad for the dog, and I just physically didn't have the strength to pull the dog away, so we had to abandon the scene, abandon the whole thing. And of course the dog handler was raging because the dog was now going to be ill. But I felt guilty about that, but I don't think that was my fault.
We were shooting a film, and I turned up the first day. I was doing fights on it, and there was an argument going on. There was an animal wrangler with a chicken, and the director was saying, yeah, but I want it to run past that guy and then turn and run to the other guy. And she went, well, I can throw it at someone and it won't kind of freak out, or I can put it down and it'll run about. He said, can you not train it to run to him, then to him? And there was a wee pause, and she went, it's a chicken.
Do you remember my wedding reception? I was in the toilet, and it just so happened that Ewan Angus, who ran the BBC at the time, came into the toilet, and he says, Paul, there's a rooster running about the Orin War. And my pal Aldo, who's a tree surgeon, that was his gift to me for my wedding, was a rooster, and it was just running about. My ma took it, and then 2 days later she phoned the authorities and said it had just wandered into her back garden.
And somebody and came took and took it away?
Aye.
Another week up Milton, it would have been in somebody's plate.
For sure.
Like the feral chickens in New Zealand just now.
Feral chickens?
Really? Apparently there are feral chickens invading villages and attacking people. They've gone mad with the COVID.
Oh, dear, dear, dear.
So the reason why we were talking about this today is because we were talking quite seriously on the phone the other night about young people, what their fears would be. Because it is quite a dangerous, scary time, this. If you're not at school, how are you going to get your qualifications? Are you going to be able to get a job? All those things. Our things were imaginings, but this is actually real.
I think that's quite harsh on Paul, really, to say that his vertigo is just, Paul's on you. It's imaginary. Let it go.
That's what you're yourself.
To anyone who's got a phobia, that's in your head.
two dry slaps and then that's it. You're cured.
Hold on yourself.
Stick a spider in Mark's face. That's him done. He's sorted.
Yeah, exactly.
But yeah, there was a survey done of late in Scotland, and a lot of the worries of young people are their education. What's going to happen? Exam results, sitting exams, and that is worrying folk.
For sure.
On that note, do we have any homework, Mr. Cox?
What's the question, Mark? Don't keep us in the dark. What's the question, Mark?
Well, there was a question there I'd read. Well, I'll just read it out to you, I guess. So there's a Glasgow Glasgow street sweeper, Thomas, he picks up, on average, 2 poo bags per street on his 10 street shift. So that's 2 poo bags per street, 10 streets that he does in a day. But recently, he's been picking up his 2 poo bags, 35 face masks a street, and 12,000 gloves per street. So, you know, it's on the simple side with regards to...
How many face masks?
35 face masks per street. So we'll come back to that. It's maybe not as straightforward an answer as you think it is.
I will say, before we leave it, you haven't actually asked us the question.
Oh, sorry. After that, all those numbers that I put together there for you. So the question is, how much waste and refuse did he pick up? As I say, it's not as simple an answer as you might think.
Did you know that stat about the gloves, the PPE carry on? They count one glove as one item.
Aye.
So basically doubling the figures every time that they go.
And their tests, when they're doing the back of your throat and your nose, they're counting that as two tests.
Honest to God, man. At least we're all in the house.
Exactly.
All in different houses, listeners.
Aye.
Different houses, yeah.
Here's the thing. See, years ago when I was at school, there was a show, it was called How We Used to Live.
I love that, Paul.
There you go. And so you would, you know, you'd find out about how they lived during the war and all that. Mm-hmm. And I'm glad you remember that, because I was like, anyway. So I got to thinking about that initially. Question to Mark John Cox. Mark, can you remember how we used to live?
Well, I absolutely remember how we used to live. Turn of the century, it would appear. It wasn't that long ago. Yeah.
It was like chimney sweep meets the young ones, wasn't it? Well, Mark and I stayed about 500 yards apart on the south side, and we used to be in and out of each other's houses the whole time.
Each other's squats?
Aye. Well, I mean, there was a bit of couch surfing for yourself, as it?
Yeah, so absolutely.
And we had this flat that Bussy inspected, my pal. He said, oh, it's amazing. It's double glazing. It's got a multi-gym and everything, right? And then, of course, I went, okay, then, accepted unseen, went up, didn't even have a lock on the door. You just pushed the door. And then in the living room, the door to the living room wasn't even on its hinges, so if you went for a pee, you had to lift the door off and then put it against the wall and then walk into the toilet and then put it back when you came in. It was quite some flat, that, wasn't it, Mark?
It was horrendous, as I remember. It didn't have a multi-gym at all. I didn't even have carpets.
I think girls may be different. I hope I'm not being sexist saying that, but I remember myself and another two girls went to view a wee granny flat. Now, the old lady had just died, so this was second year at drama school, and it was like a tiny wee pensioner's flat with all her furniture still in it. And it was in Edinburgh, and it was so cheap. So we decided that we would go, and people would come around. Everybody would laugh because it was so twee. There was doilies and ornaments. And I mean, it was ridiculous. But see our wee flat? It was the warmest, coziest, loveliest wee place. All the neighbours nice, would hand you in stuff. But I think it's kind of the story of my life, that when everybody else was living outrageous lives as a student, I was living in a dead pensioner's house. I was living in the set of Isa's house I was 20. I'd still love to do that. That'd be one of my top jobs. Not how we used to live particularly, but I'd love to be in a period drama. I'd love that. Down the stairs, cooking bacon. Kidding on, of course, because I can't cook or bake. But
you'd be acting it.
I'd be acting my wee part out.
Magic.
Natural pause. David?
David, I take it you never lived like a scumbag, no?
Yeah, one of the flats I stayed in in my short visit to university that never came to anything was a multi-let, and a nice bunch of folk, lovely bunch of folk, and we would have what we called spag nights, where I would make spaghetti. And these would involve some spaghetti in a large pot, lots of alcohol, and it would go to the point where we used to mop the flat the next day. I remember at one point they dangled me out of a window. I was willing. They dangled me out of a window by my ankles and lowered me down. We were on the third floor. They lowered me down to knock on the kitchen window of the second floor upside down.
God almighty.
We had a cooker in the flat that we'd used in a play. And we stored in the flat, and eventually the landlord visited and went mental and said, I've told you like 5 times, get rid of that. So after they left, we had another spaghetti night, got drunk and lofted it out of a window.
Oh,
yes, there you go.
Here it's Richard Anderson.
Hello, Richard.
Do you know what species Basil is, and will he become a moth or a butterfly?
I never got quite as far as working out the species of Basil, but tragically, Basil will never be a butterfly. Some of us, and I've accepted this in my own life, I'll never be a butterfly, and Basil will never be a butterfly. Basil, God willing, will be a brown moth. Now, this morning, he didn't move. And it looked like his legs had disappeared. Now, here's my question. Here's my question. Has Basil passed on to pastures new? Or is that him starting to turn into a moth now?
I don't think he's turning anything if he's dead.
But if he's very still, is that not what would happen?
Oh, yeah.
In the next phase.
If he's going to pupate, as they say. Yes. Yeah, he'll go very still. You'll notice he'll start to get a bit kind of white and bigger as he pupates. Or he'll just go a bit kind of like crusty and small if he's dead.
Next week... we'll have the answer.
If he's pupating, he'll get a bit cheeky and full of himself. You'll know.
He'll come in drunk.
Come in drunk and all that. Time is it? Get up, Basil, you say to him.
So we'll know. I'll report next week.
Excellent.
Dead or alive.
Right, okay, folks, I think it's about time that we spun the wheel for our little episode of Marco Polo to find out where we're going or where we're not going today. Here we go.
Livingston.
Oh, marvellous.
I think an interesting fact, Jane, you were saying earlier that Matt Costello doesn't come from Livingston.
But very near.
Very near.
Yes. He'll confirm this. I think he's from Bathgate.
There we are.
Is that right, boys?
Bathgate.
I think so.
It's run about that way, I'm sure. Bathgate, Livingston.
Close but no cigar. What I do know, however, is the 20th of March 2021, we will be at the Howden Park Centre in Livingston.
What a venue. What an audience.
The tickets are on sale now.
Tickets on sale now. Marco Polo, do you have facts for us?
Yes, I do indeed. So Livingston turns out to be the largest town in West Lothian. It's 15 miles from Edinburgh and some other miles from Glasgow.
Pretty much
anywhere. And it's got a population of 56,269.
It's basically the beating heart of Scotland. Do you know what I mean? Right. It truly is. It's a big, lovely, full heart. Its arteries aren't blocked or anything.
It's generally the station that I begin to need a pee when we leave Edinburgh to Glasgow. It's round about Livingston.
Now, that is an interesting fact.
There you go.
Oh, that is. That's great.
Do you know what I found out doing my... Because I always liked a new town. Quite like that. I mean, you'd have like Cumbernauld and East Kilbride and Livingston. But... a man called Bob Taylor in 1979, there was a UFO sighting. Bob was a very church-going man. He was teetotal. He was working for the Forestry Commission. And there he was. He saw a strange dome-shaped object. Now, there was a proper police investigation. And it's still a world-renowned UFO sighting because he big... Now, I don't want any comments on this. Big scores in his trousers like he'd been lifted in Livingston.
The aliens lifted him by his trousers?
By his trousers, David.
Why would they do that?
You know what aliens are like.
I don't know.
My Livingston story about a person that lived in Livingston, I did this after dinner for the Pipe Industry Guild up in Aberdeen, and the woman who presented it was an American, and she said to me, I've been in Scotland 25 years. When I came here first, I stayed in Livingston. Do you know Livingston? I said, oh, well, yeah, I know it is. Beautiful place, great venue, the Howden Park Centre. But she says to me, but when I came, I was here 2 weeks, and I was staying in an apartment block and the lady across the hall would knock on my door on a Saturday morning and she would say to me, Leanne, my name's Margaret. Would you like to come for some messages? I had no idea what she was talking about. I thought we were going to a spiritualist, but she was going to the store. Scottish is messages. That'll be your shopping you're going for. Do you like to go for some messages?
Someone's knocking on the door. Someone we've been waiting for. We haven't got a bell, so it's really just as well that I'm knocking on the door.
Hey!
Yay! Yay!
It's Matt Costello, everybody!
Yay!
How are you getting on, Matt?
I'm doing well. I'm all right.
Owing to lockdown restrictions, Matt was recording remotely from his home. We apologise for randomly dodgy audio quality. This was caused by built-in microphones, iffy broadband, and Donald Trump.
I was going to iron my shirt and shave. And this is what you do in lockdown. I've no iron a shirt since March. So how are you guys?
We're all good, Matt. We're
very
all good
well,
here,
very
yeah.
Well. There's no doubt tons of stories and things, Matt. But we've actually had a couple of questions sent in for Twitter. This one is specifically for you and Paul. Scott Davidson, who's 13 years old,
yes,
and he's a big Still Games fan. Still Game, Still, well, Still what? What's it called? Why do Winston and Stevie hate each other so much?
I think the question should be, why do Paul and Matt hate each other so much? Well, I think it's, you know, it's character and storyline driven, the reasons for the hatred, but...
Yeah, they don't like bookies. I don't like bookies. I've not been in a bookies since Still Game started. Well, funnily enough, I went to see my mother last week. I need to talk to Jane about her mum as well, because her mum's 90 as well, and she's... just survived COVID-19, which is incredible, and she's doing fine.
Oh, wow.
But, she was in hospital, and but she'd had it for a week and a half before being taken in, but she's incredible. We just put drips and all that in her and fixed her up, and she was out quite quickly, which was amazing. It's been a roller coaster. I've been crazy. When I heard Jane in the first podcast talking about her mum, or the second one, I just thought, oh, I know where you're coming from, Jane. But it's been quite a time. But now we're all smiling and back on track and just getting on with kidding on you're in prison. That's the way I look at it. I've never been in prison, but I just thought,
yeah, talk's
Matt,
cheap.
Matt, keep it truthful, Matt.
What would that be like? What would you do? I mean, so I say to myself, this lockdown, 23rd of March, what am I going to do? I'll treat it like my freedom's been taken away, which to the extent it has. No, I've got asthma, so I've got to watch what I do when I'm been out, and the family's been great. Overall, we're just getting on with it and doing our thing, you know.
I think one of the differences between lockdown and prison, one of the many, might be access to your own fridge, cooker, not having to ask someone for permission to get toilet paper.
There's a fair chance. There's a fair chance you won't get pumped in the house as well, I would say.
Yeah. What's the best freebie you've had for being Stevie the Bookie?
Yeah, I could get in trouble with the law here. Put it this way. Policemen have been very good to me.
Good answer.
Yeah, so I got... Well, I think it's just doing a very powerful dramatic acting that we convinced people that we hated each other, because we really love each other.
Matt, but we're going to... Could I take the time at this point to ask Matt about his past? Tell folk about, for instance... You've quite an interesting past in America.
America, yes. Aye, Mark. 1977, I went with my pal. I was 18 and went to Washington, D.C. Got a Greyhound bus, 3 days' journey across to Los Angeles, and worked in Burbank Studios as a carpenter.
What did you work on, Matt?
My main job was building the permanent sets for Linda Carter's Wonder Woman. And I was mainly on Wonder Woman, but I went down to the Walton set. And then when I met Will Gear, who played Grandpa, and he was sitting on a bench in the bushes and the trees and all that on the back lot, round about the Walton's front door, and he was reading Playboy. So, but anyway, I really enjoyed the Waltons, but the fun thing was that I met Linda Carter when I was in the studios. And I was like, oh, my God, that's the woman that plays Wonder Woman. And then 40 years later, I get a part in Wonder Woman 1984. that went from when I worked in the studios with Wonder Woman and filming in London, standing beside Gal Gadot. I was a bit sushy about it because he thought I was in Wonder Woman. You know, and the producer came to speak to me and he sat me down and he says, right, what do we do about the Wonder Woman thing? What is this? And I had to explain to him, like, no, I was a carpenter.
I'm assuming you signed an NDA for this, Matt, yeah?
A what?
A non-disclosure agreement. You'd have signed that?
I did, aye.
We'll remove all this.
Remove all that.
We'll cut that out, but just make up the story that Grandpa Walton gave you a big pile of Playboys when you left in 1977.
Lachlan McKenzie has asked all four of you, what would be your worst moment on set on Still Game?
It's not an imaginary thing.
No, it's really your worst moment on set.
I've got, I think probably mine would be at 11 o'clock at night in a field somewhere in Ayrshire in my simmet getting sprayed with cold water.
So, I did that moment when we were in this horrible guest house in the West End, a big, huge building. Greg Hemmel was sitting next to a guy. I thought the guy was a runner, like an assistant. And I said, this place is an absolute dump. Greg's face. Greg went, that's the owner, fella. The guy looked at me. Then I walked away, then came back and went with my fingers, ha ha, as if I was kidding them on.
Oh, brilliant. Love it.
There was a guy who was an extra, and we'd been filming for about 10 hours, and the poor soul was exhausted. He was supposed to be playing pool, and he held the cue, and he dozed off on the cue, and it went right under his eye, and his eyeball popped out onto his cheek. Honestly. And there was bullet holes all along the gantry in that place. I mean, it was something else, wasn't it?
The Gimlet used to be the Gimlet in Maryhill.
And yeah. I screamed and he was kind of ushered out. And it was, I mean, it was like one of the most horrific things. He was ushered out holding his eyeball and taken to A&E. And then we just carried on filming like it hadn't happened. He was wearing like a wig like Bobby's, right? So because we didn't want to have to reshoot stuff, they put another extra in a spare wig of Bobby the Barman. So it looked like this same extra. And they'd taken off his jacket and stuff before he left, put the jacket on an extra, made him just turn away so he was still in the back of shot. And every day after that, I said, what happened to that guy? And nobody knew. Oh my God, I could close my eyes and see it. Close my eye, it traumatised me.
Matt, your worst day on Still Game?
I just remember the time when Paul headbutted the horse.
Captain Dandy.
Oh, yeah, I remember that.
I shaved my head completely baldy and that didn't help because the cold was just, it was freezing in my head and in my toes and I was, this isn't going to do what it's telling this horse. I know it's just going to be, I'm going to be here for a bit. 10 hours, and that was when you were the police officer, David.
That's right, aye.
Yeah. That's right, aye.
Well, actually, that was a very snowy day. I remember the day up at it was a stunt horse when it fell over. Unbelievably, it caught a twig and it popped its eye out.
Because I was working at the bridge as well at the time, and I told a few of my pals on the bridge.
Matt,
and
tell everybody the bridge you're talking about.
The Forth Bridge, that's the proper pronunciation. They don't say the Forth Road Bridge. It's just called the Forth Bridge, the bridge. There's the Forth Road Bridge and there's the new Queensbury Crossing, but the Forth Bridge, I worked on that on and off while doing Still Game for 9 years and it was brilliant.
Matt Costello built the Forth Bridge. That's amazing.
Yes, yeah. Absolutely. And he signed an NDA as well.
The funny thing is, I just finished pretty much the year before that A View from the Bridge, Arthur Miller's The Royal Inn.
But that must have taken Baltic to a whole other level, did it, no, Matt?
Yes, very much so.
Thought as much.
Oh, my God. I mean, I remember one morning walking under the bridge. There's a walkway under it, it's grill walkways. And I was walking and I looked down and I heard a noise that.
We're seeing other whales, Matt. Don't worry.
I looked down below my feet and 150 feet below me, there were two orca whales.
That's astounding.
Under the Forth Bridge.
Well, Matt, listen, thank you so much.
Matt, thank you, man. Thank you very much.
Thanks, Matt. That was great. Thank you.
You're welcome, guys. It's been lovely to talk to you and see you. And stay safe, keep well, and everybody, yeah?
Right.
Thanks. All right. Bye, darling. Bye, man.
Bye.
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 What's the
question mark? Well, I'm dying to hear the answer to this week's question mark, which you've warned us has got a sting in the tail.
Well, did we get a figure for the numbers there? Two poo bags over 10 streets. 35 face masks over 10 streets and 12,000 gloves over 10 streets.
Yeah, I get 120,370, but I'm suspecting you'll say no.
120,300, but what actually happened was after the second street, Thomas said, I've done enough of this, and he's phoned the office, and Margaret's answered.
Right.
Hello, Margaret. It's Margaret, it's Thomas here. Who's supervising? It's Billy. So he put on to Billy and he told Billy the story. And Billy said to him, just got the road, Tom. So he only did two streets that day. So the numbers were way, way down.
Yeah.
You did say there would be a twist in the tale.
Yeah, yes. You did, Mark. That's very true. But I think we have to apologise to any listeners who actually assumed it would be a math question.
Well, I did get that number too, David.
I made the question a little bit easier for some of the cast here today also, because a lot of people were finding it difficult. But yeah, that'd be twist in the tale. Well, all of us are twist in the tale, but there certainly was a twist in the tale there.
It was topical, it was thoughtful, and it was thought-provoking.
Yeah, all of those. Thanks, David.
Right, folks, that's your lot for this week. Thank you very much for listening, and we will be back next week. Remember and catch us on Twitter at 3down1across, and also subscribe. See ya.
Bye.
Bye.
3down1across is an Osprey production. This episode was recorded remotely, as per the 1626 conduct required of gentlemen and ladies at a ball and elsewhere by Fabrizio Caruso. And it was produced at Soundsmooth Facilities.